Hi, I'm Bill Arnold. According to what I've just been told, here's the podcast for the Early Morning Late Show. Enjoy our conversations. Good morning. It's 4 minutes after the hour, and today is Thursday, August 17th. Thanks for being with us today. I want to start with a passage from 1 John chapter 3, verse 7. Dear children, do not let anyone lead you astray. The one who does what is right is righteous, just as he is righteous. The one who does what is sinful is of the devil, because the devil has been sinning from the beginning. The reason the Son of God appeared was to destroy the devil's work. No one who is born of God will continue to sin because God's seed remains in them. They cannot go on sinning because they have been born of God. This is how we know who the children of God are and who the children of the devil are. Anyone who does not do what is right is not God's child, nor is anyone who does not love their brother and sister. There is certainly a lot of tension and hatred and animosity flying around the country right now. A lot of it has to do with the condition of the human heart, which is deceitful and full of sin if you're living apart from God and not walking with him. So we're going to talk about that and how we can process that as believers, and also try to process the news stories that continue to be shifting about every 5 minutes. So here's a slightly good story to get started with this morning. A woman in Canada got the surprise of her life when her engagement ring turned up 13 years after she lost it on a carrot. What? 84-year-old Mary Grams lost the ring back in 2004 while pulling weeds in her garden in Alberta, Canada. She couldn't find it and eventually wrote off the ring she was given in 1951. Her daughter-in-law, who now lives where Grams used to, was pulling up carrots for dinner when she realized that there, right on the carrot, was the ring. Grams was a bit shocked, but she's wearing the ring again. It's still a perfect fit. So the moral of the story is, always hire people to pull weeds. All right, there's a lot of theological problems with my next comparison I'm going to make, but last night the rain in the Twin Cities was so bad, at about 9 o'clock I started gathering pairs of animals to put in the boat I bought. So lots of theological complications with that statement, but boy, would it rain last night. And I don't know where you were last night, if it was as bad as it was here in the Twin Cities, but it was coming down like I've never seen it. So I hope you are okay. I hope your basement is not flooded, and I hope you're having a good start to the day. Thanks for being with us today. I've got Dr. Peter Kapsner in studio with me right now, so I'm not going to waste any more time. I'm going to get him on. It's 7 minutes after the hour. We'll be back in just a minute. Good morning. It's 8 minutes after the hour. I have Dr. Peter Kapsner. He's a professor of Christian ministries here at Northwestern, also teaches a little bit at Bethel, and he is a voice of reason, and so I'm always delighted when he's in the studio. I want to talk this morning, Peter, get started about Charlottesville. It is the top of the mind news story, and I know that you are going to have an opportunity. You're covering it in a class right now at Bethel, how you're addressing racism and hatred from the vantage point of truth and love with your students.
Yeah, it couldn't be more relevant.
No.
Now in class, I have a Wednesday night class that is a history, faith, and society. So it's a lot about the church and engagement with the world. And then we have a New Testament class on Thursday night. And in both classes, we're talking, obviously, about the headlines going on in Charlottesville right now. Pretty interesting class that we've had these last couple times around, where we started asking questions, how do we as believers respond, and how do we walk this out? A wide variety of views, for sure, and all of that.
Well, we start with the condition of the human heart, and it's you're born with a sin nature, and you have a problem, a deceitful heart. You're going to live in sin. So, isn't all of this starting off from a sin condition that we've got? Problem number one, right there.
It is. I don't want to call it the natural response, but it certainly is the common response that people have immediately, is sort of this violence begetting more violence, and it's a pretty tough cycle to stop once it gets started. And you see that when, obviously, there's no excuse for plowing into a sidewalk with an automobile, and that just incites the next round of violence. And even though pulling down statues and those sorts of things isn't a violent response physically per se, there still gets to be this sort of violence of the heart that when I used to study Martin Luther King Jr. quite a bit, that he would talk about avoiding not just the violent expressions from a physical standpoint, but the kind of violence of the heart that just continues to foster hate back and forth. And it just gets into this cycle that's almost impossible to break.
Yeah, Peter, if we're an imperfect country founded by imperfect founders, and we're all imperfect people, should we be starting to try to erase all pieces of our past that are ugly?
Yeah.
Isn't that how we learn?
Yeah, I can't think of any statue in the United States representing anything that wouldn't at least be tainted to some degree. At what point do you move on in a different kind of way? I really do understand when there's a symbol there that may be causing a deep sense of pain and turmoil that we really want to think about whether we want to have that still, but also, too, to hold the tension that it is an imperfect world, as you suggested.
Well, the late Senator Robert Byrd, he has, 28 buildings and streets named after him, and he was a Klagel in the Ku Klux Klan.
Absolutely.
I mean, he's a recruiter. Do we start taking down his name off all the buildings and start eliminating the streets? I mean, where does it start? What do we do?
Yeah,
Washington, Jefferson, they were slaveholders. Are they all going away?
Right. And, you know, it speaks to sort of a method of how do we approach this kind of subject that I think, as you rightfully pointed out, isn't really maybe going to lead to the kind of healing that we want. Again, understandable on some levels, but when you look throughout history, both Republican and Democrat and different political parties have contributed substantially to the pain in our country.
Yeah. So I don't know much about the I didn't pay attention in history class.
Sure.
This is where I need the professor.
I didn't either. I just make it up as we go along.
Good.
So, yeah.
Good. We're in good company then.
Yes.
What can we learn about the transformation from the early church?
Yeah, I think that was one of the keys to some of our class conversations the last few nights.
Okay.
Was just recognizing if we take it all the way back to the very first church, and you look in the scriptures too, and there really isn't a lot of evidence where it suggested the church should be out to try to change everything in the government. You know, you look at that first church in Rome, for example, and they were not out trying to change all of the corruption and depravity of the Roman Empire. They were living a different way of life in the midst of the depravity and the corruption of the Roman Empire. And in doing so, it shined a different kind of light in the world. And that's a lot of what we talked about in class was instead of focusing on how we can change everything, it was what do we need to do as the church to live in a different kind of way that could be compelling and maybe contribute to the healing in this.
Mm-hmm. The parents of Heather Heyer at the memorial service, the dad said he referenced Jesus on the cross when talking about the white supremacists in Charlottesville when he said, "Forgive them, they don't know what they're doing." I mean, it's a lovely sentiment. I think they did know what they were doing.
Yes, yeah,
but
did.
I think what he was trying to do is extend forgiveness. And I think maybe he was making reference to sinful, unregenerate people do this kind of behavior.
Yeah, I think that statement on the cross, if you really give some pause with that to think about it, is maybe one of the most challenging statements in the text, because I wasn't there, obviously, and I don't know Jesus's interior world, how he was responding, but I use this example a lot of, was he offering forgiveness through kind of gritted teeth, and he was just really, he hated the people around him, but he thought, hey, you know, I'm the Son of God. I know the biblical text fairly well, and and so I guess
I know
I've got
to
forgive. Yeah, you know, and so fine, forgive him.
Let's get this out of the way, this forgiveness stuff.
Exactly. Or did he really see them differently somehow in the midst of his own unjustified pain that he was experiencing in those moments? Did he still extend forgiveness in a way that saw them differently through a lens of compassion? And that's an incredibly challenging thought, I know, in my own life, because mostly I can find myself loving other people through gritted teeth because I have to, not because it's how I see them properly.
Yeah, I forgive you.
Yeah, move on with my life. Yeah. I did it right.
So are your students, are they energized? Are they nervous? What emotions are going on in the classroom?
It was one of the most highly charged environments I've been in maybe 13 years
really?
Of teaching, truly. And I didn't anticipate it. I really didn't. And It was delightful and hard and good and difficult, just the whole thing, the whole spectrum.
We have maybe time for one question that came from your classroom.
Oh, are you really? Okay, let's have it.
No. Do you have one?
Oh, do I have one? Oh, I'm sorry. I thought they were calling in now. I was all nervous for a second.
Yeah, I would be too.
Yeah, you know, I think it really was that idea of what is the church's response to all of this is really where it went at the end of the day.
Okay.
So, yeah, we talked at length about how we're economically and racially segregated in the church, and we're hardly living in a way that's for one another in the church. So how can we really have a witness to share in our world?
Yes. So if you are one of Dr. Peter Kapsner's students and would like to call and grill him this morning, you can do that, 1-877-933-2484. Or if you're just any other listener from anywhere would like to call, give us a try, 877-933-2484. If you have a question or a comment, we'll see if we can get it on the air. It's 15 minutes after the hour. We'll take a short break and be back with more with Dr. Peter Kapsner. Good morning. It's 18 minutes after the hour. I have Dr. Peter Kapsner in studio with me. If you would like to call and ask a question, we're talking about Charlottesville, of course. Right now, it's still a top-of-the-mind news story for many. And 1-877-933-2484, and you can fire a question right at Peter. Peter, how can we make the biggest impact right now in our country as Christians?
Yeah, we touched on it in the previous segment there. Certainly, you know, you participate in some of the governmental arenas can be helpful, but I really do think we have not talked enough about how our life is together in the church. And the church can be just this beautiful place that is free from regulations and rules and laws. It's supposed to be governed by the law of love. And I was with a student last night and asked her the question, how many churches are in your 5-mile radius around you? And she said about 15. Mm-hmm. And I said, about how many people are in these churches? And she's, you know, ranged from 100 to 400 people. And I just said, what if every one of those 15 churches, when you walked in, people were just entirely for one another? And it was crossing economic lines, it was crossing racial lines. And if somebody had need, people willingly shared and kind of just tried to get a little window of what the early church was like that was so compelling to the world that then it said, and the Lord was adding to their number daily, those who are being saved. It just exploded because of their way of life together. And so I wonder if there's a bit of looking in the mirror we could do, myself included. It's challenging to me. I don't live a life often that is just so utterly for other people. Mm-hmm. So I think it could start there.
Yeah. So how do we regulate the human heart? You know, we can, obviously, president's been criticized for good reason because he didn't come out quickly enough and call these groups by name. But then Michael Moore, the filmmaker, I heard him last night say, if you support Donald Trump, who is a racist, that makes you a racist as well.
Yeah, I saw the same comments. And I don't know that you can successfully regulate the human heart. I think in many ways, it's the difference between the Old and the New Testament. I mean, the Old Testament laws were beautiful and rightly ordered, but without an internal change of the heart, if you just try to regulate it, it kind of gets squashed out and comes out sideways in other ways. I know when people have tried to regulate my heart that it'll find a new way out to escape without a transformation of some kind.
I mean, I can think of occasions in the past. One in particular, it was the shooting at Fort Hood when the officer, Nadal Hassan, goes in, yells Allahu Akbar, and starts shooting, killing 13 people.
Right.
And it was a couple of days before we heard really anything, and it was described as workplace violence.
Right, yeah. And
so we've got a problem with the way we use our words, don't we?
Yeah, absolutely. And just how we understand and frame things. It's, you know, I think we try to tamp things down, unfortunately, for politically motivated reasons at times, as opposed to just really getting a clear-eyed view of what's taking shape in our world, which really is, as you started out this morning with a beautiful passage, that's difficult around the human heart and around what the sin that's there.
Mm-hmm. And the president right now is apparently having trouble finding any support even in his own party.
Yeah.
Apparently there was no one stepping forward to defend him with the comments he made or didn't make. And it's interesting, the narrative, the way it changes. I'm not hearing about the colluding with the Russians right now.
Yeah.
That seems to have gone away.
Yeah, that's that goes back to even something we talked a little bit about last week, is the power of the media to try to shape the narrative of a given situation. And it really does work when you actually sit back and read the president's comments over a period of 3 days. You know, you can pick and prod as you can with any president, but there is also some reasonable ideas. Just even the idea of disavowing the white supremacist part of it, but recognizing there is also some violence and hate on the other side, and just that idea of we're not going to get anywhere if we just simply keep going back and forth like this. But you don't see that narrative. It's not a reasonable narrative. It just gets to be extreme one direction or the other on either side of it.
Yeah, Peter, what do you think? What city's next?
Well, that's a good question, isn't it? I mean,
it kind of is. I mean, this is the trend now, isn't it?
It is. It certainly seems like the cities on the eastern seaboard and sort of the southern area are maybe at the epicenter of all of this at this point. But you could see it breaking out anywhere. But I think a lot of places that have a history of some of the painful realities of slavery are some of those cities that are maybe right at ground zero at this point.
Mm-hmm. I'm concerned that it's going to happen quickly, and the trend right now is for these kinds of protests and this mob mentality.
It is
where the police get a little bit overwhelmed.
Yeah. You know, I don't want to be alarmist in that we're teetering or anything, but I do wonder, and you can see how quickly things can move in an area or era of technology these days, where things can just move with much greater speed than they could 20 years ago. There's at least a pause, I think, happening right now of wondering what could tip us over the edge, because you study any history, and I know you and I didn't, but for the last 30 years, this is the kind of thing that happens around the world on a very common basis, and there's no reason why America should be exempt from tipping into some pretty significant violence back and forth, and that's what has me pausing right now.
Yeah, I as well. All right, we've got students going back to school, so you're going to be facing a lot of new, fresh faces coming into your classroom.
Indeed.
And maybe you've got a couple of tips for the parents, because the kids are still asleep right now.
They are.
Because they're on summer vacation. They're sleeping.
Absolutely.
They'd be sleeping.
Yeah.
Because it's not noon yet.
I'd be very impressed if anybody was up at this point, so yes.
Yeah. So maybe some tips for parents or grandparents to share with their son or grandson and daughter how to remain strong in their faith when they go to college.
Yeah, I think the students that I see that adjust the best have maybe a couple things going for them these days. The first thing is that they are involved, and it's going to sound cliche, but they've got a community. They have a set of relationships around them. They aren't trying to navigate all of this new world alone, because it's really disorienting when they first get to school and out of their parents' home. And I think that's one of the key things, is how quickly they can get involved with some friends and maybe another community of faith is critical. And then I think the second thing that I notice is students who aren't so tethered to their technology all the time, mm-hmm. they seem to adjust better somehow. I remember it was probably 2005-ish or so when I was teaching that I maybe had one student who was struggling with an anxiety kind mm-hmm. of situation each term. And we'd accommodate for that. And it was about when Facebook hit and started running roughshod through our culture that the vast majority of my students began to struggle with anxiety. And they weren't sleeping anymore. They were up at night making sure that their profile was properly sanitized. Wow. And, you know, all of those kinds of things. And to the point where today many of my students are struggling with anxiety and they can't find their sense of self in this disorienting time when they're always just plugged in. So
yeah.
I tell students, just get yourself unplugged the best that you can.
Yeah, we only have about a minute left, Peter. And when I was reading the story about this Canadian woman who lost her engagement ring, all the blood from your face drained.
Oh.
You became white as a ghost. What was that about?
I almost left the studio, Bill. It took me back just into that present moment when my wife, Hallie, had taken off her engagement and wedding ring while
yeah.
she was out gardening. And she put it somewhere that then I managed to, I think, throw away was Ooh. The final solution of that. So we lost that ring probably about 6 years ago now. But this carrot story has given me hope that I might just show up at Cub someday and the vegetables, and there's the ring. So I'm, you know, in Jesus's beautiful kingdom, there's always hope.
There's always hope.
I just think there's a shot here. So
yeah.
It was, yeah.
Yeah. And is your lovely wife, has she spoken to you in the last 6 years?
Yeah. Well, yeah, just yesterday.
We oh, finally, nice.
Yeah, it's a big moment. So we're celebrating this right now between the two of us. So thank you.
So always a pleasure to have you in studio, and thank you for coming in early.
Yeah,
early.
Lovely to be here again.
All right, thanks, Peter.
Yep.
All right, 26 minutes after the hour, we'll take a short break, and we're going to have some news, and we're going to also talk to Kim Cattola at 20 minutes to the hour. Be back in a minute. Good morning. It's half past the hour. We're going to take a little break for news. And in about 10 minutes, we're going to talk to Kim Cotola from Cradle My Heart Ministries, Cradle My Heart Radio. We'll be back in just a minute.
How did you find Faith Radio? And how is God using it in your life?
I have just chosen to have it playing no matter what. And I found that friends that are riding in my vehicle or my parents, that they are just encouraged by it too, and it sets a good example. I cannot imagine listening to anything else. It has truly, truly been a blessing.
Share your Faith Radio story quickly and easily on the Faith Line, 877-93-FAITH, 877-93-FAITH.
It is 25 minutes until the top of the hour. Stay tuned. Next hour, we have Dr. Carol Swain is going to be on the program. And here's a clip from her appearance on Fox News the other night.
I believe part of the solution is to open up dialogue and listen to what people are saying, because by shutting down dialogue, we are making it so that like-minded people are only talking with each other. And just coming out and denouncing white supremacy and painting everyone with the same broad brush does not solve the problem. There are black nationalists, there are white nationalists, there are Hispanic nationalists. We can't say it's just one group. So the president was correct when he said that there were many forces involved. If we want to come together, we need to move away from identity politics and multiculturalism and focus on the American national identity. That's the only way we're going to be able to get beyond this.
Respectful dialogue? Huh. That's common sense. We're going to have to find out more about what Dr. Carol Swain has to say coming up in the next hour. We'll take a short break, and when we come back, Kim Cotola is going to be with us. Cradle My Heart Radio. We'll be back in a minute.
If you're inclined to step back from anything that might sound political, hear me out. This is Jim Garlow. The same Word of God, the Bible, that speaks to our individual lives, our family life, our church life, also speaks to our schools, our workplaces, our communities, local, state, and even federal government. There's no major issue that God's Word does not provide basic and transcendent truth. It was God who first thought of it and even described government in Isaiah chapter 9, verse 6, as being on the shoulder of the incarnated Son. When government is mentioned, don't start running. It creates great delight in the evil one who desires any areas we want to surrender to him. Our sovereign king does not yield to the evil one, and he never intended for us to do so either. This is not a call to be more political. It's actually a plea to be more biblical. There's more at jimgarlow.com.
Good morning. 23 minutes until the top of the hour. I want to thank all the Faith Radio listening family that I know prays for the precious lives of the unborn. We care about them a great deal because God does, because he knits them in the mother's wombs. And here to continue this conversation on Thursdays, we always have the pleasure of talking to Kim Cotola from Cradle My Heart Radio. Good morning, Kim.
Good morning, Bill. What a pleasure.
Thank you so much. Okay, let's get on a plane and go to Iceland here for a minute and talk about what's going on over there.
You know, Iceland has been in the news along with Denmark and maybe Sweden for leading the way in Down syndrome abortions. These are healthy children, and Down syndrome, as you know, is not a fatal nor lethal condition.
Mm-hmm.
It's simply a chromosomal disorder or condition. Some wouldn't even say it's a disorder.
No, genetic condition.
But Iceland, CBS News picked up the story and is reporting it as if it were a win, saying Iceland is eradicating Down syndrome, which made it sound like, wow, it's some kind of a chromosomal breakthrough. But, you know, as Patricia Heaton tweeted out, They're not really eradicating Down syndrome. All they're doing is killing people who have it in utero. And so I think it's a great story that helps us, you know, kind of, again, search our hearts and say, do we really believe in the value of every life? And of course, Down syndrome, I think, Bill, I don't know. I think it's, I talked with a bioethicist who is a parent of a child with autism who's also an Eagle Scout. And he said, you know, Down syndrome is next, that parents of, you know, children who have autism organized. And now there's much more awareness and there's much more resource and there's much more acceptance. And he said, Down syndrome has to be next. And we're seeing that. We're seeing Down syndrome models. We're seeing, you know, individuals with Down syndrome accomplishing all sorts of things. And yet this mindset remains that they're flawed, that they're less than human, and that abortion should be okay. And so, yeah, the CBS report said, almost 100% of moms who receive a positive test for Down syndrome will terminate their pregnancies in Iceland right now. And it's not a win. It's a tragedy.
It's a tragedy. And then those tests aren't reliable 100% of the time either.
That's true, too. A lot of people on Twitter were tweeting out their stories of a wrong diagnosis. And a lot of people were tweeting out their stories of a correct diagnosis and, you know, listing the accomplishments of their friends and loved ones with Down syndrome. You know, and I think we've talked about my brother-in-law, Brian, who is a Special Olympian in bowling. You know, he's an artist. He does all sorts of beautiful work on posters and other, you know, different media that he uses with markers and different things. I mean, he's a golfer and he's a part of the family, right? I mean, God doesn't make mistakes with people. And, you know, as the Bible tells us, Bill, the weaker vessels are the ones that have the greatest honor in the body. And if for any individual with any disability, they become a mirror into our hearts. And they also reflect not only our own hearts, but they reflect how far short of perfection we fall in comparison with our holy and perfect God. You know, that we're really no different on the continuum if we start talking about a holy and perfect God, even if we're a perfect human specimen, which of course doesn't even exist. So.
Right. I don't know if I'm connecting the dots properly on this with Iceland, but I remember Ahmadinejad said in Iran that there were no more homosexuals in Iran. And that's because they were throwing them off a building.
Right. I mean, I think that's a very fair comparison, Bill. And I think it's eugenics. It's this idea that was perfected in Nazi Germany that in order to have a perfect race, which would lead to a perfect society, you had to eliminate the human weeds, as Margaret Sanger called people of color. Or imbeciles, as people who have mental deficiencies used to be referred to legally. Of course, that's an incredible slur that no one, I hope, would use today to talk about someone who has a developmental disability. But yeah, that's what they were. They were regarded as less than human and to be either, you know, tucked away in an institution somewhere where they could be, you know, officially neglected or just eliminated. For their good, because they could have no quality of life. This way of thinking is not new. It's as old as time itself. And I hope that in the name of progress, all of us who care about one another and who want to follow, you know, God's way of life would reject all of that, would reject everything that smacks of eugenics in any way.
All right, Kim, pop quiz. Who out there would be working to reverse the abortion policy?
Yeah, so abortion pill reversal has become a very interesting political football in the world of reproductive rights. There have been some mainstream physicians who have written and said that, you know, it's the medication abortion bill is a two-pill procedure. So you take one pill in the doctor's office and you are sent home with another pill to take a couple of days later. And if you don't take that second pill, you can reverse the first pill with a high dose of progesterone. And it was a mainstream obstetrician who endorsed this and discovered it. And I think he had some personal connection. I'm sorry, I don't recall the doctor's name. But so it started getting traction because many women will take that first pill and then change their minds.
Mm.
And there have been 300 children born to such women since 2007. It's a small number when you think about a million abortions every year, but there are 300 children who are alive because that first pill was reversed with a dose of progesterone. It's now been approved as curriculum by the California Board of Nursing so that nurses can learn how to do this. And, you know, that's happening against the backdrop of Plan C, Bill. Plan C is a movement, and it's young and hasn't gotten a lot of traction yet, but they've got like 120 followers on Twitter. But Plan C intends to put the abortion pill in the hands of women without a doctor or telemed or any supervision.
Unbelievable.
Yeah. And you can go to Mexico and buy those pills now.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but... and then what's so ironically despicable on their website is the disclaimer in teeny tiny font at the bottom of the page saying, this isn't medical advice. No, but we're going to connect you with pills that will abort a pregnancy, you know, and of course you can't legally dispense that bill after I think it's 10 weeks of pregnancy and maybe even earlier, but you know what's going to happen. Women who are further along are going to take this to their peril, and lives are going to be lost. Mm-hmm. And lives have already been lost with medical abortions when the bleeding doesn't stop. And women who are taking the pills secretly don't seek help until it's too late. There are many, many of those stories that are out there as well. So abortion pill reversal is a thing. It's been already called junk science by the abortion rights, advocates out there. And so, right? I mean...
Yeah.
The Washington Post and some other mainstream outlets have dismissed it, taking their talking points. New York Times had a pretty fairly even-handed piece about it, if you want to look that up online. And abortion pill reversal has been saving lives, and it is not junk science.
Yeah.
And do your homework if you want to know more about it, because the truth exists in the mainstream medical community that it is a life-saving possibility.
Mm-hmm. Kim, I want to take a little bit of a break, be very short, but when we come back, Russia is now working to reverse their abortion policy, which has pretty much decimated their population.
Yep, they're in demographic winter. I'd love to talk about that.
Awesome. We'll be back in just a minute with Kim Cotola. It is 14 minutes until the top of the hour. Just so you don't have to glance down at your watch as you're driving, it's 12 minutes to the top of the hour, so you're doing good. You'll get to work on time, I hope. Anyway, I'm talking to Kim Cotola from Cradle My Heart Radio, and there's a group of activists called the Pro-Life All Russia Social Movement, something like that? I don't know what they're called. But they've already gathered 1 million signatures in support of the legal ban on abortion in Russia.
Yeah, the pro-life movement has been growing in Russia, Bill, and part of it has been driven by demographic winter. Russia has so decimated her population through abortion that the aging population is now lacking support from younger workers.
Mm-hmm.
This is what happens. It's happening in Japan. It's happening in many countries around the world. But I went on pro-life mission to help the pregnancy help movement there in 2012. And a group of us went to help, again, establish pregnancy help centers. They can't be Christian outreach organizations in official Russia.
Mm-hmm.
So they don't overtly witness. But it's everything else that a pregnancy resource center here in the U.S. would offer to their clients. Life-affirming options and support to, see a pregnancy through. And so what we heard from the women there was that when you go in for your first OB visit as a pregnant woman, they say, are we having an abortion? Or are we having a baby?
Mm.
Because they have so perfected the little outpatient procedure using a very thin cannula that they can accomplish it in about, 20 minutes and you walk out and it's literally birth control, literally. And we talked with women who said they'd lost track. They had no idea how many abortions they'd even had. And so now, this week, 1 million signatures are being presented to ban abortion in Russia. Not only to turn around the population issue, but to, you know, to uphold the sanctity of human life. So there is church involvement with the Russian Orthodox Church, but there's a lot of support at the government and secular level as well, because, again, there's a population issue. You know, when 1 million signatures have been amassed in the country that led the way globally on legalizing abortion back in the 1920s, some kind of tide is turning. And Russia is about a century later understanding the full ramifications of not valuing human life. And it's dire in their society. And so we'll see if this, it's a pro-life forum, we'll see if it has the impact that they're hoping for. I think the final meeting of a week-long meeting is today.
And the Russian Orthodox Church said they consider abortion to be a sin and its position is not going to change.
Well, it is a sin. And, you know, the good news for those of us who are followers of Jesus Christ, and even for those who aren't yet, is that there's a remedy for that sin, the redemption and hope and love that we find in Jesus Christ, who has already done everything needed to pay the penalty for every sin. But, you know, Bill, there's no getting better afterwards until we acknowledge that it's a sin. And there's no way to avoid those consequences in the aftermath without, you know, letting people know that it's a sin, that it is morally wrong. There are two lives involved with every pregnancy. Every good obstetrician will tell this to his or her patient, and they'll make sure that they are treating both mother and child, you know, not giving medications to mom that might affect baby. In every case, Bill, except when it's a woman's will to terminate a pregnancy, in every case, we acknowledge there are two lives with every pregnancy, and we ought to in the case of abortion as well.
Kim, talk about the interesting argument between actor James Franco and a Princeton professor. I couldn't believe when I saw this.
So there's this online series on YouTube that's called Philosophy Talk or something like that. And yeah, she's a philosophy professor. And, you know, the Federalist covered it this week. I don't remember where I saw it, someplace on Facebook. But it's hilarious. It's inadvertently very, very funny because he's sitting there, you know, James Franco. I don't know if you like James Franco or not. His whole deal is that he's a goofball, right?
I like goofballs.
There's no intellectual there, right? It's time to party when you see James Franco on the screen. And so he's sitting there with another philosophy professor and, I think from Yale. And, you know, this is their series. And that's the tongue in cheek, right? Is that, okay, philosophy isn't just for nerds at Yale. Even James Franco can get it. And Elliot Michelson is his sidekick in the series. It's called Philosophy Time. So in this episode, they're with Princeton University philosophy professor Elizabeth Harmon. And she published this theory that she's rolling out for them, I think in 1999, quite a long time ago. So it's nothing new. And it's completely circular reasoning. And at some point, there's a pop-up on the screen that shows that that's what she's doing. And so her argument basically is this, Bill. And, you know, this is important to know because you'll get into conversations with people who aren't philosophy professors who will make arguments like this. She says, aborting an early fetus is morally licit, it's allowable, because the early fetus has no moral status. Why does he have no moral status? Because he will be aborted. That's circular reasoning right there. And, you know, she's basing it on the unsupported assertion at the U.S. Supreme Court that said the fetus is a potential person. That's a philosophical argument, Bill, and it does not square with the scientific evidence. Life begins at conception. Over 20 embryology textbooks affirm that from conception forward, there's a distinct living and whole human being present. You know, the question then is, how do we value that early fetus? And what basically she's saying is, we value it because we value it, or we don't because we don't. And either way, it's right. And I mean, it's when you see the expression of the philosophy professor who tries to stay deadpan, you know, there are no eye rolls from him. But James Franco cannot contain himself because it's you know, it's not stupid and it's not silly, but it's also completely morally bankrupt, you know, to say that, oh, well, I can determine if you have any moral value or not based on whether or not I want you to. This is the argument that she's making. And really, it isn't silly or stupid. It's the basis of our law. Mm. It's the basis of our law. And it should be a moral outrage to us. You know, so, yeah, if you have a chance to see the Philosophy Time thing, it's worth it just to watch James Franco and his reactions to this.
Well, I think the professor from Princeton was basically saying, when you were a fetus, you had a future, therefore you were born. But the ones that were aborted in that fetal time had no future, therefore they were aborted. I mean, the thinking was just so idiotic.
Yeah, I mean, she's definitely basing that. And she made all sorts of, you know, you can't go here, you can't go here. She set up all sorts of exclusions that would allow you to, you know, punch holes in her, right, in her argument. But it's all based on this idea of a potential person. And that's a fiction. There is no such thing, Bill. A person is or a person isn't.
Amen.
And again, then the only question is, how will we value our fellow human beings?
Kim, thanks so much for being on the show again. I'll talk to you next week.
Thank you, Bill. Appreciate the opportunity.
Yep. 3 minutes until the top of the hour. We'll take a short break and be back. That wraps up hour one. Coming up next hour, Drew Trotter is going to be with us, and we're going to talk about the challenges of the college campus for the Christian students and faculty. And then Dr. Carol Swain is going to be with us. She's a professor, author, and political commentator. Excited about the next hour. Stay tuned. Be back in a minute. Thanks for listening to the Early Morning Late Show podcast. These conversations are available because of your prayerful and financial support. Make a gift now at myfaithradio.com. To avoid missing future editions of the Early Morning Late Show, subscribe to the podcast today at iTunes or your podcast player. And thanks for sharing this audio link with a friend and grow the impact of the Early Morning Late Show.